Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the WDW Resorts Refuge Podcast. And today, I am here with my dad, Dale.
Hey!
Hi! Hey, how's it going?
Fine?
Yeah. Today, we'll be talking about oddities. You might be wondering what oddities are, right?
This was my idea.
That was his idea, by the way. Just saying. But oddities are basically odd things that you find in the resorts. So we're going to kind of do like a general top five oddity top five in no general order, right?
Yeah, we got five we're going to go over.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And the first one is the giant Grand Floridian birdcage.
Mm.
Now, the birdcage is enormous bird cage in the lobby of the Grand Floridian, okay? So it's based off of like a Chinese bird cage, okay? Did you know it had two lovebirds in it?
No.
It had two lovebirds in it. But now, sadly, it sits empty.
Well, okay.
Did you know it was also crafted in Spain?
The Chinese style bird cage crafted in Spain. So this one was actually This particular birdcage was made in Spain and shipped over here then.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yeah. And then, so basically, why would you think they have a birdcage in the middle of a lobby? Well, they have a birdcage because around the turn of the century, decor was trending towards nature and animal life. So designers thought it would be trending towards nature and animal life, and so they put the birdcage in there. Yes?
Yeah, they had... Well, they had this enormous birdcage. They also had, as far as the design, they had I know there was one smaller birdcage, and then I think there's a fountain with some animal in it.
Stuff.
Some statue of animal. So a lot of nature and animal within this design.
Yes. And another reason they put the birdcage in there is because designers thought it would be disorienting coming off the monorail on the second floor. So they put in the giant birdcage and other massive landmarks like the giant staircase and then the like birdcage type elevator and other stuffs to help you find your way through the resort, through the lobby.
Right.
So yeah.
So giant birdcage basically for design purposes, turn of the century kind of design and to bring it to nature.
Yep.
That's neat.
It is very cool. I wonder how they put it in there.
I don't know. It's a really big lobby.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably piece by piece, and then they bring it in and they assemble it.
True, just like the chandelier.
Yeah, and the elevator, the birdcage elevator.
And the birdcage
elevator. A lot of stuff is done that way.
Yeah, that's cool. Another great oddity.
Number two.
Yeah, number two. But they're not in really any particular order, so it's... Not number two, but it is number two.
But if you're keeping track, this is the second one.
Yeah. Anyway, another great oddity is the Boardwalk Mutoscopes.
What's a mutoscope?
A mutoscope is a machine. It's a coin-operated machine that only has a single reel of movie inside of it. And it's often an excerpt from an existing silent film, but sometimes an original lasting about a minute. So you put the coin in, and then you turn and you look in the little viewing area, and you turn the crank, and you can see the movie going, right?
Yeah, like a flipbook.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
And you control the speed of the flip as you turn the wheel.
Exactly.
That's neat.
Yeah, but I figured out that you can't go backwards, which is kind of weird.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
The mutoscopes are authentic machines from the time period, and then they're basically a huge mechanical flipbook with about 180 850 sturdy photographic prints on individual cards attached to a central core and flipped by a hand-cranked ratchet.
That's impressive.
It is very impressive. The mutoscopes are located in the resort hallway across the bathroom to the right as you come in. Right?
Yeah, go in the main lobby, entry doors, bathroom's on the right. They're on the right, yeah.
Yeah. And then
right front of a window that overlooks, I think, boardwalk area. The green area, the grassy area.
Yeah. But today you don't need a coin, so it's free, I think.
Yeah, they still work.
Mm-hmm. They do still work.
Yeah, you've looked them, I've looked in them.
Mm-hmm. They were originally manufactured from 1895 to 1901. So that's kind of cool. Disney transported a bunch of authentic mutoscopes for the opening day of Disney World, and the two at the boardwalk were enjoyed at the Penny Arcade from Paul Eakin's collection. So Paul Eakin had a bunch of mutoscopes and other antiques that he gave to Walt Disney World for the Penny Arcade. And then basically, when the arcade closed in March of 1995, most of the collection was stored in a storage room under the castle that was leaky. Okay?
Whoa, that's
yeah.
Neat.
But some were moved to the Main Street train station.
That's right. These mutoscopes were on the train station, right?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah. Sadly, most of the collection was sold to private collectors in 1997. But a cast member named Jim Corcus, who was hired to teach about animation history, he asked his superiors to get a mutoscope to enhance the experience of his teaching, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So he got the mutoscope and repaired them and picked out the slides or the movies that are in the mutoscopes today.
Wow.
Yeah, which is really nice. But when Disney stopped offering classes about animation history in 2000, they moved the mutoscopes to the boardwalk where they still reside today. Which is kind of cool.
So I imagine in the kind of the turn of century boardwalk kind of era, that they probably had these mutoscopes and probably were about a penny.
Exactly, yeah.
And you can watch their little movies.
Yeah.
That's neat.
And then one unique thing about these mutoscopes is that they have a shell shape on the side of the machine, which is kind of cool. And they have this cool intricate design on the side below the shell, and then all these cool I don't know what they are, the corner things that spiral around down the corners.
Yes, the little spirals.
I'm so descriptive tonight.
They're so very spirally in the corners, and they go all the way down.
Yeah Very descriptive. Awesome. We're awesome at this.
One of them, the little cartoon, is called Cat in the Bag.
Mm-hmm. Which, yeah, I've seen that. I've actually seen that.
I don't remember what it's about, but
this is so neat. It's about a cat in a bag. Bom, bom, bom.
And it used to cost a penny.
And it used to cost a penny, which is more than what a penny is today.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, those are really neat. They're still there. If you ever get the chance, there's one red one, one green
them.
One. Very, very neat.
They're very neat cool. Going on to number three, but not really number three, are the boardwalk creepy chairs.
I call them the creepy chairs.
Other people call them the creepy chairs, too.
If you look them up on the internet as creepy chairs.
At the boardwalk.
They actually show up.
Yeah, they do, which is kind of funny.
This is interesting. So this is another oddity at the boardwalk.
At the boardwalk, yeah. They're originally called nanny chairs because during the 1880s, if you were to ride a carousel, an adult was. Adults would usually sit on these chairs while kids rode on the horses because
It was inappropriate.
Exactly.
For female nannies.
Thank you.
To even ride side saddle. On a carousel horse.
Wow. That's
so
crazy.
Female nannies, late 1800s, nope, not gonna happen. You gotta sit on the nanny chair.
Yikes. So yeah, I guess that's why these are called nanny chairs.
Mm-hmm.
These chairs are replicas of real chairs from 1889. And did you know, if you turn the two chairs around in the boardwalk, they have names. So one is Carrie and the other is Todd.
Okay, so I had no idea These chairs had names.
They have names.
Why do they have names?
I don't know. Got me.
Wait, hold on. Okay.
Okay.
So I guess there were a couple of Imagineers who were involved in the reproductions of these mm-hmm. chairs. They put their names on the backs of the chair.
Huh.
So a couple of them, what'd you say? Todd. So one Todd of them was named Todd.
And Carrie.
The other one was named Paul.
Yeah. We're going to talk about that right now, right?
Yeah.
So, did you know there are actually four chairs?
See, I didn't know that either.
There's four chairs. So, the other two are hidden somewhere. But their name...
Somewhere?
Somewhere. Somewhere in the boardwalk.
Okay.
Resort. But their names are Paul and Alexander. Okay? Now, what the cool thing is that... a couple of guests wanted to find these other two nanny chairs, okay?
I want to find them.
So, they got a special poem, a special riddle to find them, okay? You want to hear the riddle?
Absolutely.
It says, head to the lobby where you saw the first two. Find Mary Poppins, she'll be above you. Look behind you and walk past the electrolier? Electrolier, that's what we're calling it.
Electrolier?
Sure.
Okay.
Carry on down the hallway, and where do you appear? Locate the elevators that will be in your sight. Click number one and go down one flight. Head down the hallway that you haven't traveled, and there you'll find what had you unraveled. So there.
Well, that's impressive.
It's very impressive. Cool. Yeah. So yeah, that's kind of cool. And, okay, I have a hint for you. Ready?
Yeah, okay.
So, it says, find Mary Poppins, she'll be above you, right?
Sure.
So, last time we talked about the boardwalk lobby, we talked about a replica of a two-story elephant house.
Yeah, that's right.
That's above the mantle.
Yeah.
Above the fireplace.
I remember that.
Mary Poppins' shadow is in the elephant house.
No way.
Way.
Oh, that's cool.
So I would assume you walk behind the electrolier, which is what? What's an electrolier?
I think it's kind of like a chandelier.
Okay, interesting.
That holds electric lamps.
Okay.
There you go.
So yeah, and then you walk behind that, mm-hmm. you walk behind that, and then you carry on down the hallway to the elevators, you click number one, go down one flight.
Okay.
And then you go down a hallway that you haven't traveled. And then you find what you have unraveled.
Huh.
Yeah.
I've only seen the two in the lobby.
I know. Next time we go, we'll have to find them.
Okay.
Next time we go.
I would like that.
Perfect. But yeah, the creepy chairs are super creepy. they have the faces without any hair.
Oh my, yes.
And they have like sunbursts coming out from all around them behind them. Okay. And then they have the torso, the top, and then they have a skirt as what you're sitting on, and then they have two legs, like actual feet at the bottom on the front, and then they have like two regular chair legs on the back. And then the torso is colored, and they got their like their hands on their hips, and then they're all like, it's just creepy.
I'm laughing hilarious. These are so funny.
It's creepy.
So, it's like you're sitting on the lady. And well, you can't even tell on the face. I mean, it kind of looks like, I don't know if it's a man or a lady or what. But anyway, you're sitting.
Well, they're wearing skirts. And for the time, they would probably be a lady.
Okay. So, you're sitting basically on the lady's lap, right? Mm-hmm. On her skirt. Yeah, that's
a little creepy.
Very strange.
That is so, so weird.
What was strange to us now was not strange one day.
Back then.
So, that's the nanny chair.
Interesting. Moving on to our next oddity, which is the Animal Kingdom Lodge giant mask. It's 16 feet tall and 240 pounds. And just imagine, one person had to wear this. One person!
So, one person is wearing this 240-foot, pound, mask.
Yeah.
On his head.
On his head.
One guy.
One guy. That's crazy. It's called the, how did we pronounce it?
Oh, we looked this up before we started recording.
The Adele.
We couldn't find him. It's
I-J-E-L-E. I'm not going to pronounce that again. I'm just going to call it the giant mask. But it's I-J-E-L-E, which is kind of weird. And then, speaking of, when this guy holds the mask on, he gets to dance, too.
With 240 pounds on his
with
head.
With 240 pounds on his head, 16 feet tall.
That's impressive.
It is very, very impressive.
You know why they did that?
Why they did what?
Did had this mat, had this dancing?
It okay. So it is during the IJELE masquerade. Okay.
Okay.
So basically, what that is, it's an elaborate dance that is performed while the giant mask is parading through the streets. So basically, it occurs every 10 to 25 years at times of festivals, important celebrations, or burial ceremonies. And then, it's also used during dry seasons to call forth fertility and a plentiful harvest.
Huh.
So that's what it's used for.
Huh. Okay.
Another thing, the mask takes several months to create and has figurines signifying different aspects of life. So one aspect of life is a horse is often included, signifying greatness and majesty, okay? And then there's a python, often a python for royalty. So basically there's an upper and a lower section of the mask.
Okay.
So the upper part has most of the decorations and stuff, and then the lower part is to conceal the person's legs and whatnot. Okay? So it's kind of lame.
So, this thing, it covers, does it cover the entire body then?
Mm-hmm.
So basically you're seeing this mask thing basically just kind of walking around and dancing around. You can't see the person underneath.
No.
Oh, I didn't know that.
No.
I thought it was just kind of on the head thing.
Yeah, but so the person goes inside and they have like a little head thing that they use to pick it up and whatnot.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's kind of like the Maleficent parading around if you can't see the person inside.
Uh-huh.
Like a parade float, kind of.
Uh-huh.
Except it's used by one man.
Right.
Yeah. So, and so the, there's an upper and lower section, and then the upper and lower section is joined together by a python, which I said is for royalty.
Ah, okay.
So I would assume, like, something like the lower section, maybe the less wealthy, the poor, whatnot, and then the top section, maybe the wealthy? That's what I'm guessing, and then the royalty kind of bonds those two types of people together.
Interesting.
I would say.
Okay.
So yeah, and then get this ready. An adolescent boy must excel in a number of challenges to be chosen to wear the mask every 10 to 25 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
I wonder what kind of challenges they have to do.
Something physical, because they gotta carry that thing on their head.
Fair. Okay.
Physical.
Good
very,
call on that one.
Very physical.
Very physical. You gotta be able to physically be able to carry this.
Definitely, definitely.
Wow.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen this thing, it's absolutely amazing.
And then they have signs all around it to show you different, to tell you more stuff.
Right, and I guess they do have some pictures in there of it being used. Maybe not necessarily this one. I'm sure they have all kinds of different ones.
Mm-hmm.
Different decorations.
Yeah.
Different meanings on these things.
Yeah. Yeah, they must create a different mask for every celebration. Because it says the mask takes several months to create. So they must create it several months in advance.
So maybe for whatever they're celebrating.
Yeah.
Whatever, if it's they're calling for plentiful harvest, whatever they need. Or whatever symbolizes those things.
And this one, in the Animal Kingdom Lodge, has tassels all over it, and it's got animals and other weird stuff that you can find on it. And then the lower part's, like, basically, like, a bunch of sheets. A bunch of sheets that are so intricate in design and colorful, and mostly yellow and oranges, and some greens in there, but it's very colorful and magnificent.
Yeah, a lot of triangles are used on this. A lot of different triangles, a lot of different colors.
It must be some aspect of life that kind of like...
Mm-hmm. That's on the bottom. It reminds me of like a quilted design.
Oh,
with
yeah.
Triangles on the
it
bottom.
Does, doesn't it?
And then on the top, there's a lot of like little dolls, people.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen that?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
All around it, there's dolls.
Yeah.
And then there's, I guess that's the horse on the top.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And then there's a man with a blue head on the very, very top.
Uh-huh. Just, wow. Yeah, it's crazy.
It's fascinating.
It is very fascinating.
And you walk into that lobby, and it's a feature. I mean, it's there for you to come see and read these signs, look at, and be in awe over.
Definitely. So, yeah, it's very, very, very interesting.
It's neat. I really like it.
Yeah. Next time, we'll have to go there and take pictures and look at it some more.
Yeah, I like pictures of the signs. So I could
yeah, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that's a cool thing. That's a cool thing to look at.
It is.
It is very
cool. That was number four, right?
That was number four, if you're counting.
I'm counting. So we have a fifth one for today.
Okay, right? Let's hear it. Yep.
Okay, cool. Well, that I'm going to cover is the totem poles at the Wilderness Lodge.
What?
Yeah, I know, right? It's actually three totem poles.
Three totem poles?
Yeah, there is the raven totem pole.
Okay.
There is the eagle totem pole.
Okay.
And then there's the Humphrey the Bear totem pole.
Well, they gotta throw something Disney in it.
That's over by the gift shop.
Yeah.
I think it's got Humphrey on it.
Humphrey,
and
Mickey.
And Goofy Donald. And Goofy.
Yeah.
Okay, we're not gonna talk about that one though.
No.
So these other, the two.
It's not really an oddity.
That's a little odd. The two totem poles, though, the two ones that are I'm going to speak of are the eagle and the raven right there in the lobby.
Yep.
So to make these, the Disney World hired Dwayne Pascoe.
Mm-hmm.
Dwayne Pascoe. So he was a renowned wood carver. Disney officials, they designed the characters and the placement of the totem poles and the characters on the totem poles. And the goal of designing the poles was using legend and lore.
Yeah.
But not necessarily specific to one tribe.
Definitely.
Which is unifying.
Yeah. It's unifying all the tribes.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. And so they're not really picking any specific one out. So you can kind of learn about multiple things.
Yeah.
And so the characters they use are pan-coastal.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's basically relevant
like Pacific.
Yeah.
Ocean, Northwest.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Mm-hmm.
So those characters from there. And they didn't use any figures associated with any crests.
For families and whatnot.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I was a little confused by that.
Yeah.
So no crests, no family crests.
Yeah, like, have you seen, like, How to Train Your Dragon? Like, those families have, like, crests for them?
Sure, yeah, a lot of family crests.
Like, Hiccup and whatnot.
Yep, and you can go into the United Kingdom Pavilion in Epcot, and you can look through, there's the Book of Crests, I think. You can find your crest in there.
Cool.
For whatever your last name is.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, so that's the thing. So I guess, no family crests. That's cool. These totem poles, they took several months to carve.
Dang.
By Mr. Dwayne Pascoe and him and his three assistants.
Cool.
They are 55 feet tall. How tall was that mast? 16 feet?
Yeah.
And this is a 55-foot totem pole.
Hey, if you were to wear that, that would be insane.
I can't imagine how much they weigh.
No idea.
So they are 5 feet in diameter at the bottom.
Yep.
And they are 3 feet diameter at the top.
Mm-hmm.
And they took 5 days to install.
5 days!
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
Crazy.
That's about 10 feet a day, right?
Yeah, I think.
Yeah. All right, so I actually have the story of one of these.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So I'm gonna tell the story.
Yeah. Both of these totem poles have very interesting stories that Dad is going to tell. One of them.
Yeah. And I've chosen to tell you the raven pole story.
Okay, let's hear it.
Okay. So at the
once upon a time.
Once upon a time. At the bottom of the Raven Pole sits the Whale Chief.
Okay.
His ancient North Pacific myth is told in this way. Whale Chief was asked by Mountain Lion if he could marry Whale's beautiful daughter, Dolphin. Whale Chief refused, and Mountain Lion was so angry that he scratched Whale Chief's throat, leaving scratches so deep they have remained there on many whales until this very day. Frog, the communicator, listened to the deep words of Whale, then went up and told them to Mountain Lion and all the other animals and humans that the Whale Chief had decided to hold an archery contest. He would set up a mark, and the animal, bird, or human that came closest with its arrow to the sender would be allowed to marry his daughter, Dolphin. This caused great excitement in the mountains, in the forests, along the beaches, and especially in the sea. The whole world remained dark at this time, so Whale Chief had large torches set up and lighted so each archer could clearly see the target. Wolf tried first and missed. Bear tried and missed. Eagle tried and hit the edge of the target. Beaver, otter, kingfisher, and all the others tried. A few sent their arrows very close to the center of the mark, but none were perfect. Whale Chief looked around when he heard a small voice calling to him. "Will I be allowed to try?" asked Wren, who was the smallest of them there. "You are very small," said Whale Chief. "Our bow is much too large. Have you a bow?" "Oh yes," said Wren, and he held up a large spruce needle and another smaller one for his arrow. "Very well," said Whale Chief. "You may now take your turn." Wren had to hop into a nearby bush, for his bow was taller than he was. Wren took careful aim in the torchlight and sent his needle-like arrow flying straight to the center of the mark. "You've won! You've won!" whooped the Whale Chief, and he clapped his enormous flippers together until it sounded like thunder. Mountain Lion roared, Wolf howled, Bear grunted, Eagle screamed, Otter snapped, and Kingfisher shrieked, and they all together started to chase small Wren. Wren snatched up his spruce needle bow and flew up into a knot hole of an old tree, a safe place where most wrens have nested ever since, and where wild animals could not catch them. Hoots, the bear chief, and his wife, who had small cubs who were supernatural, that is to say, that were able to transform themselves so that they could choose to live in the animal or human world, as bears or humans. Whenever these two lived as humans in a village, you could always see the face of a small bear in their hands. Wren did marry Dolphin, and they lived with the supernatural bear cubs on a small island where a beautiful dolphin would leap out of the water for joy while her small husband sang for her and did his wonderful hopping, skipping, dance, and practice with his bow. "I miss the salmon people," beautiful dolphin told her husband Wren. "They go out traveling to the farthest northern oceans for so long." "I'll go tell Frog," said Wren. "He'll know how to find them." "Yes," Frog agreed. "I'll find them for you," and he put his mouth beneath the water and he called, "Kawoomph! Kawoomph!" "I'll call them back into these shores, these islands, and these rivers." And so he did that with one more loud, "Karoomph!" And the salmon people returned. They came leaping up into the rivers and over the waterfalls, so eager where they had to be back home. The humans did not throw stones into the rivers near the salmon people, and they sang to the young salmon as they left the river to feed and grow large and shiny in the ocean. And the animals and the humans knew that they would return to the very river where they had been born. Now Raven undertook his greatest trick, the task that changed the darkened world. He flew up through the heavy clouds and blackness until he reached the Sky Chief's house. Then he dove down through the smoke hole and landed near the fire where a small child helped him find the box. With his beak, he cleverly untied the double cords and knots that tightly bond the painted box. Raven flung aside the lid, and with his powerful black beak, he lifted out the moon, breaking many clips of stars out of the cedar box. Then he flung them all into the dark night sky where they have spread their light. Then he reached into the box again and flung on the fiery ball of sun as a gift to all animals, birds, fish, and humans. That's how light came down from the Sky Chief's house and has brightened the whole world ever since.
Bravo.
Thank you.
That was a nice story, actually.
I thought so.
That's a cool story.
Yeah. So, the bear pole?
The bear pole is the
right. The eagle pole, excuse me. The eagle pole also has an interesting story.
Yeah.
To it. But as you read the story, you can just go up and up and up the totem pole, and you get each part of the story. And that's why eventually when you get to the top, and the raven is at the top, and the raven has done this with all the sky, and he's at the top.
So exactly.
That's what he's
doing. It's the end of the story.
That's the end of the story.
It's very cool.
So, there you go.
Yeah, I like it.
That's my oddity of the day.
Awesome. Now, I have some very important questions.
Ooh, I like question time.
Ready? What is your favorite oddity?
Out of these?
Out of these.
What were they? Let's recap. See.
We've got the giant birdcage in the Grand Floridian.
Okay.
We've got the mutoscopes at the boardwalk.
Okay.
We've got the Boardwalk Creepy Chairs.
Okay.
We've got the Giant Mask at the Animal Kingdom Lodge.
Okay.
And we've got the Wilderness Lodge Totem Poles.
Okay. I enjoy... Oh, gosh. I mean, I'm torn between two of them. I really like the mask.
Mask.
That's my favorite one. And I like going around the signs around it and reading about it.
It's cool.
Yeah, cool. That's my favorite. How about you?
I think mine is the Creepy Chairs.
Creepy Chairs, cool.
Mine is the Creepy Chairs.
I like it. Why's that?
Because they're creepy. They're cool. I'm going to go find the other two Creepy Chairs now.
I do too.
Yeah. But I have another question.
Okay.
Ready? Mm-hmm. What oddity has the best story?
Best story.
Best story.
I think it's the Mutoscopes.
Ooh, yeah.
I do, because where they came from. They came from Main Street.
Yeah.
I mean, in the Penny Arcade.
Uh-huh.
And then they were saved and rescued and brought here.
Yeah, that's very cool.
Brought to the Boardwalk.
That's neat.
I just like how they ended up where they are.
Yeah.
I think.
That's cool. I think my favorite story, the best story that I think, is the Totem Poles. Because of their stories that they create with all the figures.
Mm-hmm.
Which is very cool. And then the history of them is kind of cool, too. So, yeah.
Yeah, I love the creativity that went into those.
Mm-hmm, definitely. The Disney people, officials, were really good at the characters and the placements.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's really cool.
I think that's cool.
That's
really cool.
Yeah.
I think that is it for today.
Well, you sound sad.
I know. I don't want to stop talking about Disney.
So, five oddities?
Five oddities. Okay. We will definitely be coming out with five more oddities.
That's right. Part two.
Part two. This is part one. We're going to have part two.
I'm excited about that.
Me too.
But we couldn't put them all in one.
No, that would be too long. Yeah. Too
long. All right.
We'll see you guys later. Don't forget Instagram, email, Anchor. What else? You want it? I keep forgetting these stuff.
iTunes and Spotify.
Oh, yeah. iTunes and Spotify. Definitely.
Yep.
And your favorite podcasting site or app.
Yep.
Yep. We'll see you all later.
Thanks for joining. See ya.
Thanks. Bye.